Wild Air today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Someone reminds me about the Auburn Cup. I don't know why. What you mean by that message? You might throw something into that. I'm not sure. Paul, was it, sent that message in, and what that reference is to the Auburn Cup as such. Don't forget to keep your messages coming, by the way, 0833 97 97 97, or you can email studio@kfmradio.com. Now, facial recognition technology, we spoke about it on the programme yesterday when we went live to the GRA conference in Westport, County Mayo. And Helen McEntee, the Justice Minister, addressed the conference yesterday. She says the introduction of legislation to enable Gardaí to use facial recognition technology, otherwise used as FRT in criminal investigations, is not about mass surveillance. She said that facial recognition technology enables what she calls automated searches of CCTV footage. She said that there will be safeguards and codes of practice in place to comply with GDPR and protect people's individual prices. But not everybody is happy with that, and a number of concerns have been raised over the plans for facial recognition technology to be used by Gardaí, with civil liberties groups saying it enables what's called mass surveillance, but the Minister for Justice disagrees. Well, let's find out what the Irish Council for Civil Liberties thinks, because I'm joined by its Executive Director, Liam Herrick. Good morning again, Liam. Good to talk to you again.
Good morning, Clem.
Now, what are your concerns? Well, first of all, just explain to listeners what exactly facial recognition technology is about.
Well, facial recognition technology is widely used in the United States and the UK, but less widely used in Europe, technology where CCTV cameras are equipped with a technology which allows them to focus in on individuals in a crowded area, in a train station or in a public square, and focus in on the face, take measurements of that face, a biometric scan of the face of the individual, and then match it using artificial intelligence against a prepared database of images so that they can make a match. So it allows them, for example, in scanning O'Connell Street in Dublin or wherever else it might be, to pick out individual faces using artificial intelligence quickly and at high speed, and then set that against a database, and if a match shows up, that an alert can issue. And it's an incredibly powerful form of artificial intelligence, but the power is what has made it so contentious, because this effectively can remove the concept of anonymity in public space. It has a profound effect on people's freedom of movement, their privacy, their right to take part in a protest, for example. It also can monitor who they're meeting with, who they're talking to. And the technology is advancing at such a stage that it also allows the monitor, the surveyor, to assess somebody's emotion, for example, their emotional state, whether they're angry, whether they're agitated, whether they're upset. There have been moves at a European level to ban its use in public spaces and for law enforcement, because the potential for misuse and excessive use is so high. And the European Data Protection Board has said that live facial recognition technology will interfere with fundamental rights and freedoms to such an extent that they may call into question the essence of these rights and freedoms themselves.
All right, just to ask you one question, Liam, at this point. CCTV cameras are widespread, no matter wherever we go anyway. CCTV cameras are currently capturing our images day, night. We've heard about it being used in murder cases in this country, so forth. Helen McEntee says that her view is that, and I'll put an inference on the words that she's saying, those who are not involved in criminality have nothing to worry about. Effectively, this will mean that the Gardaí, instead of having to spend thousands of hours trawling through CCTV footage, that this particular technology would save them those thousands of hours of time in their pursuit of criminals.
Well, I think your listeners will know, Clem, that the kind of nothing to hide, nothing to fear line is the one that's always used by governments to justify excessive forms of surveillance. There is widespread use of CCTV at the moment. It is problematic. And the Data Protection Commission has initiated a number of investigations into the guards' use of CCTV. What they have found is that the guards are not properly trained in how to respect data protection, and that they've had very poor policies at all levels of how they use the information they already have. But we're talking about adding a hugely additional layer of capacity to track people across space. Now, it's one thing to say that if there's CCTV footage in a particular occasion when you know that a crime has happened, to get a warrant to look through that CCTV and retrospectively look at it. But the potential for facial recognition technology in public space is mass surveillance of the population at a much more general level. I should say that one of the great difficulties in having this conversation this week is that the minister has announced something very significant and then published absolutely no detail. And I think that that's deeply unsatisfactory from a democratic perspective. So we have to essentially guess or deduce from what she's saying what this might look like. But what I'm saying to you is that at the European level, there are efforts to ban exactly what she's proposing. So there may very well be significant problems in terms of European law in this area.
Now, in regards to that, the Garda Representative Association themselves have said that the technology would provide what they call, and I use the words of Damien McCarthy, a Dublin GRA representative, he's quoted as saying, it would give Gardaí a very positive advantage when tackling serious crime and could speed up the process, saving those thousands of hours which we talked about. On the other side of the coin, Assistant Professor at UCD Centre for Digital Policy Elizabeth Farries says it can be discriminatory and it moves us further towards what you just mentioned there, Liam, a surveillance society. In what way can you tell us could this facial recognition technology be discriminatory? After all, if its prime and sole purpose, and McEntee says that there will be measures to protect the innocent and to avoid, you know, mistakes and that. So from that particular point of view, how can it be discriminatory other than targeting criminals?
So in the first round, in terms of the minister saying effectively this is only going to be used against bad people and it's only going to be used against serious criminals, we're not aware of any jurisdiction where this technology has been used where they have successfully managed to keep it in a proportionate and focused way that it didn't involve significant mass surveillance. And if the minister has an example that she wants to refer to where there's been a success in use of this without the kind of problems we're talking about, we'd love to hear about it. In terms of the discriminatory factor, there's two elements to this, Clem. One is the cameras which are scanning and monitoring the crowd, and the second is the database against which they try to match those images. And in the compilation of those databases, the experience has been that they've tended to have inherent biases, that they're less effective at picking out people from certain ethnic groups, or less effective at distinguishing between women than they are for men. So this has led to a problem large numbers of people, particularly from certain minority groups, being falsely identified as being suspects, led to people being wrongfully arrested, wrongfully charged, and so on.
And we know that in certain societies, I'm thinking of the likes of China, where it's used very, very widely in the population, and in other jurisdictions, democratic and non-democratic as well. But again, the Gardaí say that the technology would allow Gardaí to tackle cybercrime, especially in the area of child exploitation, trafficking, all of that. He says at present there's a 3-year backlog of devices that have not yet been accessed. So I wonder, is the devil in the detail, Liam Herrick here? Is there, for example, aspects of this, if there were particular restrictions placed on it, that would reassure you and other human rights groups that this is not moving society to Big Brother is watching you all the time, 24 hours a day, in a most intrusive manner? Is there anything that would reassure you that this could be introduced and solely focus on crime prevention or crime solution?
I think, Clem, it was very unfortunate that the minister, in discussing this proposal for facial recognition technology, brought in this idea of cybercrime and child sexual abuse, because they're two very separate questions. We have a major problem in Ireland in terms of the ability of the guards to investigate cybercrime, including child sexual abuse online. And the problem there is the guards have not been given enough training and enough resources. They don't have enough staff and they don't have enough money to do the job properly. That's been a glaring problem for several years that the guards have consistently called out, and the government has failed to provide them with resources. That is where the minister should be focusing her attention, we would suggest. If there is no direct connection between this question of giving the cybercrime unit enough resources and the question of introducing a whole new system of facial recognition technology. So what we would say is, at the moment, the guards have a lot of problems about data protection, they have a lot of problems about how they use CCTV, and they need a lot more resources in terms of serious cybercrime. There's a lot of work to be done, and against that background, to be trying to introduce something that most European countries are now trying to ban in terms of public use of facial recognition technology is deeply and profoundly misplaced.
Executive Director of the Irish Council of Civil Liberties, Liam Herrick, thanks very much for your time, Liam. And undoubtedly we'll speak again whenever that legislation is introduced, which the Minister says it's expected to be enacted by the end of the year. She intends to seek Cabinet approval to include the proposed measures around facial recognition as committee stage amendments to the forthcoming Garda Síochána Recording Devices Bill. She said she referred to that backlog of scanning digital devices of up to 3 years. She says five additional Gardaí have been appointed to the National Cybercrime Bureau, and it was hoped to appoint 20 more in the future. She acknowledged, you heard Liam Herrick reference it there, that Garda numbers were not where they should be, and while some Gardaí were resigning and leaving for better paid jobs in the private sector, the numbers had increased by over 21% in the last 7 years, and this year over 11,000 people had applied to join on Garda Síochána. Certainly there are serious concerns about this facial recognition technology, that while the merits of it in solving crime, we can't argue against that, but we can certainly argue against a situation which would be Big Brother is watching us. Everywhere we go, everything we do, 24 hours a day. None of us want that. And there are various messages coming in on that and other topics. Anyway, China have used facial recognition for years. A recent crime in Beijing resulted in the arrest of over 10,000 people for questioning. Well, was that a good thing or a bad thing? China is also using it for the suppression of ethnic groups in China, in particular the Uyghur population, where tens of thousands of them are being placed in what are called special re-education camps to conform to the system. Yes, and a number of listeners are referring to that. Let's take a break and we'll come back with more.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Yeah, Mick and Mead says that it's used in many, many, many countries, not just China and Russia, where it's particularly used to control movement of the population. And when I say control the movement, basically the government to know everything about them and be able to control them in terms of the state being uppermost, form of fascism, of course, and dictatorial stuff and all of that. According to Mick, it was rejected in the UK. There are more than enough CCTV cameras in this country. But the point, I think, that those who would advocate for it and including on Garda Síochána, is that it would save thousands of hours because it speeds up the system, where with facial recognition technology, you can, a face is put into the computer. The computer scans through its second. If you've ever searched for something, say you want to search for the best prices for a holiday, boom, 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 up it comes. This kind of facial recognition technology would be the same thing. Instead of the guard sitting down and spending hours looking through a CCTV footage in real time, it would save them that, because they would feed in the biometrics of a particular face and see if that pops up anywhere. But the real worry, of course, is the 24-hour a day surveillance that it could involve, controlling us. Big Brother is watching us every minute of the day. Do we want that? I certainly don't want that. But if its use can be controlled and specific to crime solving, yes, okay. So the devil will be in the detail, as Liam Herrick said. Interesting, the minister says she's introducing it ahead of any proposed legislation, but we'll see anyway. It's unbelievable that the guards are they trained in anything in Templemore, says Joy, because they don't receive enough GDPR training, they don't receive enough driver training, and much more to that as well. I agree with Liam, your speaker, says Jack. McEntee will bring in this to erode people's rights and peaceful protest. Big Brother again. People need to protest. The problem is not enough Gardaí. 4,000 Gardaí took early redundancy and the government closed 100 stations, says Jack in relation to that. And as usual this time of year, there's an absolute epidemic of hedge, grow, verge trimming, particularly evident around Castledermot, Kilkee, Leavittstown and Athy. We'll have a look at that in a couple of minutes' time. Let's go to Ciara. She has more.
Yes, I'm joined on the line by Sinn Féin councillor Noel Connolly for Kildare Newbridge. Good morning, Noel.
Good morning, Ciara. Good morning to listeners.
Thank you very much. You have asked the council to confirm what extent dogs are allowed in public buildings and facilities in Kildare Newbridge MD and whether there are plans to make these areas more dog friendly. I'm going to assume this is something that's key to many people's lives in terms of assistant dogs.
Yeah, it is. And the council gave a comprehensive report in that they allow assistance dogs and puppies in training into public buildings like libraries and council offices and that. They do have concerns about people who have fears or anxieties about dogs or allergies to dogs, so they don't have plans to expand dog access to other public buildings.
Okay, so the only dogs that are allowed in is assistant dogs, is basically what you've found out.
That's it, yeah.
Okay, so you can only be identifiable as an assistant dog or puppy in training to have full access to the public buildings, is what KCC did say on that. Now, Noel, if we move on to you asking for confirmation on plans that are in place for flood relief works in Kildare Newbridge MD.
Yeah, the council gave a comprehensive report. The flood relief scheme is proposed for Newbridge. Details are available on floodinfo.ie. I asked a qualifying question specifically around the works for Newbridge. The director told me that the flood scheme for Newbridge will involve strengthening defences at Old Connell Weir, as well as a channel and thrash screen upgrade on the stream between Kilbeelan View and the industrial estate. I've also asked other questions around public consultation and river sensors by email, and I'm awaiting a response from the director.
Does that mean that it will have to be addressed at the next MD meeting, or will you have those answers before the next MD meeting?
I'll have the answers today, I imagine.
Okay, great. Now, you asked the council to consider the purchase of the former Bank of Ireland premises. This is on Dublin Street in Monastrevin, for the use as a shared services centre. Would this be something like possibly to do with remote working hub also, Noel?
Exactly, yeah. I'm delighted to report that the council are taking a proactive approach to this, and they've visited the premises already. There's been considerable local interest in the building since the week before last, when the ATM machine was removed and replaced with a door. The loss of our only 24 ATM machine in the town has been deeply felt. I met with the local credit union recently, and I'm hopeful that they in time will provide a replacement ATM. There's far too many people leaving the county every day for work, and a shared services hub will give them another option then to work in the town. The council have said that the bank would fit into their working hub strategy. I know we'd be at the mercy of budgets and the open market to try and buy this building, but we've enough derelicts around Monastrevin, so hopefully we can make it happen.
I appreciate your time this morning. That is Sinn Féin councillor for Kildare Newbridge MD, Noel Connolly. Thank you.
Thank you indeed, Ciara. Thanks indeed, Noel, for that. Just to continue that message before we head to Owen about the amount of hedge trimming the listener says is going on and cutting of grass verges, etc., around the Castledermot, Kilkee, Leavittstown and the Athy area. Various birds are nesting at the moment, and many of them are close to the ground, says this listener. The trimming of hedgerow verges can destroy nests, and more importantly, takes a vital source of insect food away from all nesting birds at this time of year. It also destroys breeding habitat for butterflies, various species of butterflies along with that, and the moth species as well, and destroys the levels of biodiversity in our hedgerows, says the listeners. Now, I have to say, I'm under the impression that everybody had taken a view, local authorities and so forth, but the appeal has to go out to individuals as well. Stop trimming and cutting the whole place to within an inch of its life. Particularly, I don't see the need to be mowing road margins. It's only grass and wildflowers. and should be left in place for biodiversity and stuff like that. Let's anyway hear more, because the Carers Association of Ireland, those not employed by the HSE, are up in arms because they still haven't received the €1,000 pandemic bonus. Owen.
Well, the National Community Care Network has called on the Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly, to urgently clarify when community-based carers will receive the long-awaited €1,000 pandemic special recognition payment for frontline healthcare workers. To discuss this, the Chief Executive of the National Community Care Network, Fiacra Henze, is on the line. Fiacra, good morning and welcome to the programme.
Good morning.
Tell us a little bit, first of all, about the NCCN, who you are and who you advocate on behalf of.
Well, essentially, we were set up in 2014, and the idea was to kind of provide a unified voice across 20 not-for-profits to social enterprise home providers or home care providers. And that has been basically working to try and get standards, get licensing, get a more credible, I suppose, position for home care providers across the country.
And to give more background information then about what these calls are on the back of, under the original proposals, only those carers who are directly employed by the HSE would have received the €1,000 payment. But your organisation understands now Minister Donnelly is expanding that to all community-based carers.
That's correct, Owen. I suppose the ironic thing is that those carers directly employed by HSE, they're beginning to get their payment now, and the carers that are employed by NCCN members, their activities are funded by the HSE. So it's ironic that basically both cohorts of carers are funded from state funds, but one has been told they're getting it from day one, and we've argued for it, and we're now understanding we're getting it. But I suppose carers are anxious as to when they get it.
Okay, and I know as well that particularly in the sector, recruitment is a massive issue at the moment, and it's an area that has struggled for the last while, some may say, and this doesn't really help on top of it.
Absolutely. I think a very critical component now in sustaining home care is the recruitment and retention of carers. And we would argue that gestures like the €1,000 pandemic once-off thing, those things, they acknowledge the huge contribution that carers make, and in so doing, hopefully encourage other people to come into the role of carers, because any of our companies, 20 companies across the country, could in fact employ 20 to 30 carers each company. We have probably up to 1,000 vacancies across the country. I think it requires a special person to commit to being a carer, but we have many of them and many examples, and we have carers who have remained in the role for 30 and 40 years. So it suits a particular person, but what we would say is that we need to establish a career path that actually encourages people to come in and see, well, if I get these qualifications, I can go from A to B to C and have a long-term career in caring, because we desperately need them.
And I'm sure as well that people working within the sector would argue that, you know, during the time of the pandemic, they pulled together, they worked in conditions that a lot of us wouldn't have wanted to work in. And it's not necessarily about the money itself, it's about that recognition and getting that recognition.
It's not just about the money. I suppose the position is such that the people who are caring out there, they deserve respect. And in general, they have been getting respect. However, we want to put a little bit of a monetary incentive to that respect. And I suppose the reality is these carers were largely responsible for facilitating discharges from hospitals to keep beds available for more urgent situations right through the pandemic. And this should not be forgotten, because they both helped to discharges from hospitals, but at the same time, they were actually keeping people safe at home. And this is reflected in the figures, the COVID cases in the community, because they were kept to a minimum. And that credit is due to the carers. and the carers, I argue that they deserve the recognition for this.
And I note you're also quoted as saying, Fiacra, that we shouldn't now cause divisions within the healthcare sector about the payment. And while in the last 24 hours you're calling for the clarity on when carers will receive the frontline workers' payment, it is something that you've been engaging with government ministers over the past few months on in order to get them to outline their position on this. But as you say, no information forthcoming yet.
No, and I think that it is important to state that NCCN would recognise the contribution of carers who are directly employed by the HSE. They are doing a great job, but it's a similar job to what the carers with NCCN members are doing, and I don't see why there should be any disparity. And I think it would be a very dangerous precedent if you were to pay simply the ones employed by the statutory, not the others, because then you're creating a divide in the workforce which would not at all be healthy. Because my fear is that we discourage people from joining the sector because they don't see that they're treated equally, and then it undermines the whole future of home care.
Okay. On that note, Chief Executive of the National Community Care Network, Fiacra Hennessy. Fiacra, many thanks for joining us on the programme this morning, and good morning to you.
Thank you both, gentlemen, for that. Owen and Fiacra Hennessy. Actually, when I heard the name Fiacra Hennessy, I said, I know him. He was in my class in school many, many years ago in the Banner, in the Christian Brothers. And that same Fiacra Hennessy, Owen, I mentioned to you in conversation, as well as running that organisation now, which is called the National Community Care Network, was an All-Ireland Schools 100 metres champion and record holder.
Yeah, very impressive.
Yeah, he was a fantastic athlete altogether. And it's interesting, I haven't met him since the day we left school. And I was absolutely intrigued and surprised when you came to me and said, I'm doing an interview with a guy called Fiacra Hennessy. And I said, oh, all right. Well, anyway, well done. Good interview it was, 2-1. Well done. Autism campaigners and school principals are reacting with shock. I think we mentioned this this morning, Owen, in our newspaper review about a government decision to accommodate children with autism in the Dublin area, and that would extend into Kildare, of course, in special temporary education centres from September. Details of the plan emerged last night. Adam Harris, who's been with us on this programme frequently, of the charity As I Am, and I'm only saying this now because of the link, he's a brother of the Minister Simon Harris, who is responsible for third level education in this country. Adam Harris of the charity As I Am said he is, and I quote, truly shocked by the plan, which will mean, what he says, the segregation of autistic children from their peers. He said his organisation estimated there were at least several hundred autistic children across the country who have been unable to find a suitable school place for this coming September. As I Am is currently surveying parents and hopes to have a definite idea as to how many school places shortage there is by tomorrow. We might look to get him on the programme tomorrow, Owen. Mm. On Twitter last night, the Minister for State for Special Education, Josepha Madigan, described the plan to create a number of temporary special education centres for children with autism as, and I'll use her words, a supplementary measure to ensure that while children await a new special place, class placement place in a mainstream school, they can access a more sustained level of support in a setting with peers of their own age. Of course, many people might say, Owen, this is ghettoising children with autism.
Yeah, and look, we have covered it on the programme before, and I mentioned this morning that it's a start. It certainly doesn't, you know, solve all the problems. I think the most fundamental thing is that children get educated, and that is at the core issue. But a lot of people would argue that children, particularly on the autism spectrum, they are capable of integrating into what would be called mainstream schools.
Yeah, one principal has described the proposal as kind of like a Mosney for camp for kids, in reference to the Mosney holiday camp, with Mr. Harris continuing to say there are serious questions about whether or not such a plan would meet the constitutional test of providing appropriate education for children. I mean, many people will be concerned about hiving off these children from mainstream education. While the minister says the children will have access to qualified teachers and special needs assistance in the new centres, well then, if they would have access to these in the new centres, why can't these qualified teachers and special needs assistance be placed in the mainstream schools? That would be the argument, would it not, of parents?
Yeah, and I've just, while you were talking there, I've been in touch with Adam Harris, so I've asked him to come on the programme in the morning, so hopefully we get to discuss this further tomorrow.
Well done, that man Owen Beatty. Like, I mean, he's like, did you ever watch the series MASH? And there's a fella in MASH called Raider O'Reilly. And he's called Raider, the corporal, the little fella, because he's always one step ahead of the commanding officer. And when the commanding officer says, "Hi, Raider, I want you to..." It's already done, sir.
Yeah,
there
done
you
and
go.
Dusted.
Owen Beatty. Owen Raider Beatty.